ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
I say to the players every year, we're never going to go on that field without hitting that sign. Notre Dame is a very special place. And the last thing I want to go through your mind when you hit this, it's your obligation to your teammates not to let them down. You want to fail, you have the right to fail. You do not have the right to allow your teammates to fail. And that's how this sign came about. I put it up.
That is legendary Notre Dame football coach Lou Holtz with a story he has told many, many times about the legendary sign that is Fighting Irish slap on their way to the field. The one that says, famously, play like a champion today. Holtz did put it up. That is 100% true. But where did he get the idea? Another powerhouse college football program, it turns out, has some thoughts. So today, ESPN's Dave Wilson tells us who might or might not deserve credit for one of the most iconic phrases in all of sports, and how much could be at stake. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, October 27th. This is ESPN Daily. So, Dave Wilson, I have summoned you here today because I want to talk to you about a college football icon. Really. But the icon is not a player. It's not a coach. It's not a stadium. It's not even like a game or anything. It's a sign. So tell me about this sign. Where is it? What does this thing even look like?
It's in the hallway leading from the locker room down to the field at Notre Dame Stadium. It's a gold sign. It was hand painted with blue lettering, about 3 feet high, 4 feet wide. And it says, play like a champion today.
Yeah, I mean, this is a sign that is not just a thing you sort of look at and venerate. It's a thing you physically interact with.
Yeah, it's a tradition at Notre Dame for players to hit the sign on their way down the field. You've seen it all over the place. They play it before games.
I mean, this thing is in movies, right? I mean, it's on television, on these NBC broadcasts of Notre Dame games, but it's also like in cinema also.
Yeah, in Rudy, famously, the players on their way to the field are all fired up and go hit the sign. It just becomes synonymous with Notre Dame.
As the Notre Dame players now leave their renovated locker room with their individual gesture on the two signs on the way down the steps as they get set to come out of the North Tunnel.
Yeah, I mean, this is where I admit, Dave, that I visited Notre Dame once. I brought back a pint glass with Play Like a Champion Today emblazoned on it in the blue lettering that you were describing. I was watching Ted Lasso, and they have a sign that says Believe that they slap above their doorway, and it's in blue lettering with a yellow background, perhaps not coincidentally. So this thing, which is a famous piece of sports history that's meaningful to generations of players and people at this point, why did you want to dig into this? Why dig deeper into the story of the Play Like a Champion Today sign?
I just happened to be in Oklahoma covering the Oklahoma-Nebraska game, and that was a Saturday. Just 2 days previously, Notre Dame had announced a licensing deal with a company for Play Like a Champion Today, and everyone at Oklahoma seemed really up in arms about it. And so I was really curious why that was.
Dave, the story that you've reported here is a real rabbit hole, a mind-blowing one for me because I knew nothing of the alternate hidden history of this sign. But I want to just start here and explain for people how this started at Notre Dame. Because in your piece, you talked to a player on the team there who arrived in 1989. And this is Rick Meyer, who is a star quarterback, was the future number two overall pick in the draft in the NFL. What did he tell you about Notre Dame football and the religion of it, really?
Well, I mean, obviously, he grew up in Indiana. He grew up a big part of this. And he said when he got to Notre Dame, he didn't realize the sign hadn't been there already for 50 years. He thought, and he just said the locker room was sacred, the stairwell was sacred, the tunnel was sacred, and that sign was a big part of that.
The fact that he thought that the sign was there forever, as I did also, incidentally, that's not the case, it turns out. What did you learn about when the sign was actually put up there?
So I talked to Lou Holtz, who was the coach who got hired in 1985. And he said that over the fall break that year, there was nothing to do. There's no recruiting going on. So he went to the library and just checked out as many Notre Dame history books as he could find.
I'm in the motel, which I stay in until my family moved down, and I go through the book, and somewhere there's a picture in the book of the entranceway into the stadium, down the steps, and there's a sign, "Play like a champion today." So I started to ask around, what happened to that sign? Who put? Nobody could tell me. Nobody knew anything about it. And so I said, okay, I'll tell you what, we're going to get this made up.
And so he sent an assistant coach to the sign shop on campus and asked them to make one up. And it was up for the 1986 season.
I mean, this is a scene out of a movie, Dave. Lou Holtz, like, blowing dust off of ancient books in the university library, trying to restore the glory of this program. And I don't want to, like, credit the sign too much here, I suppose, but Notre Dame did start winning championships at this point again, right? I mean, it was 1988 when they win a title with Lou Holtz. The team becomes a media darling, to put it lightly. I mean, I think of Notre Dame football now, and I still think of Touchdown Jesus, the fight song, the gold helmets, and this sign from 1986.
Right. In 1988, they win that national title, still actually their last national title. And then 1991, they become the first program to get their own TV deal when NBC gave them that giant one-team deal.
This sunny and cold Saturday in South Bend, Indiana is a milestone day, the 300th game in historic...
Yeah, I mean, that deal, Dave, for people who aren't, like, familiar with it, just describe how unique that is, how Notre Dame has used that to, you know, market itself to the planet, basically.
It's funny because people don't realize now that all these games weren't on TV. There were two or three games a week. Notre Dame got a deal where they had their own time and place every week on a national network, and that was just unheard of.
And NBC, I mean, they weren't subtle about them showcasing the sign, right?
They were not. They put a, you know, what's called a lipstick camera, one of the little mounted cameras in the hallway there. And it showed every week, they showed the players coming down those steps and hitting that sign.
Down the steps of the locker room into the tunnel. For the final time this year, here come the Irish.
John Heisler, who worked at Notre Dame for 40 years and wrote 10 books, I believe, about the Irish, said that, you know, when people would come to town, that was the first thing they asked him is, when could they go see the sign? It was more popular than going to a football game. Heisler told me there were probably, he counted more than 40 products in the bookstore featuring the sign. It just became sort of like synonymous with Holtz and Notre Dame in that era. And, you know, it just took off.
So the person who made the sign for Lou Holtz, I mean, this is a real person. This isn't a movie character. Who was she?
Her name was Lori Wenger. She worked on campus painting signs. And it was just, you know, she said it was just part of her daily job. Someone, an assistant coach, came over with instructions from Holtz on what he wanted. And Lou said he was very specific about what he wanted. Play like on one line. A champion on one line and today on the last line, and she painted it to his specifications.
You report that all of these fans and former players would then also commission Lori directly to make them their own version of the sign?
Right. So she gets an order. She gets a request to paint the sign. She makes one, and her husband delivers it, and it turns out it's Rudy who had ordered it.
Wait, so this is the real Rudy. This is Rudy Rudiger in real life who is doing it. Where is he putting this thing? What's he doing with it?
He's, you know, as our friend Ryan McGee wrote last year about Rudy, he's got basically a whole Notre Dame museum in his house. So he just wanted one more piece of memorabilia up there. Imagine you're an employee of the sign painting shop at Notre Dame, and all of a sudden you just delivered a sign to Rudy Rudiger, and all of a sudden you realize, hey, if Rudy wants one, there's probably a good chance a lot more folks would want one of these too.
So yeah, Dave, as I'm picturing all of these replicas now scattered across the country in the shrines inside the homes of Notre Dame fans everywhere, there is another side of this story that you've reported, because another famous football program, they actually say that this sign was their idea first.
We When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Dave, I understand that Notre Dame and Lou Holtz, their famous, famous head coach, they're only getting more famous because the Play Like a Champion Today sign and the slapping of it as the players go onto the field, it's a ritual that's as famous as any other in sports, basically. And at the same time, there is outrage hundreds of miles away at the University of Oklahoma. What's happening there?
So at the University of Oklahoma, Bud Wilkinson arrived there in 1946 and his assistant and took over in 47. He was 31 years old, and he was starting his own coaching career there, and he put up a Play Like a Champion sign in the Oklahoma locker room.
So this would be more than 40 years before Lou Holtz goes to the library and unearths this artifact that inspires him to make his side. Where does Bud Wilkinson say that he got the idea?
Bud Wilkinson played quarterback at Minnesota under a coach named Bernie Bierman. And it's reported that Bernie Bierman would tell his players to play like a champion today before they took the field.
So I know what the Notre Dame sign looks like, obviously. What does the sign at Oklahoma look like? How omnipresent is that thing?
The original sign that Wilkinson put up is in the Switzer Center at Oklahoma. You can see it. They also have a banner that's over the tunnel that players run out under that's on the field that says Play Like a Champion. And then there's another one, a horizontal one in the locker room that's over the doorway to the field.
And so as this competing history with Notre Dame is clearly on the record, Dave, I do have to ask, like, the book that Lou Holtz says that he saw his inspiration for the sign in, what book was that?
Nobody knows. Lou doesn't know. Notre Dame historians don't know. He has no idea what book it is, and nobody does. And so that's what makes all the Oklahoma people so mad and convinced that he just straight up stole it, because no one can ever find any existence where he found this.
Wait a minute. So the book, the legendary book, I mean, this is apocryphal. There, Oklahoma, I imagine, you know, they have evidence that they'd like to weigh against that, I presume.
Yeah, I mean, the history at Oklahoma is well documented. In the 50s, newspapers wrote about it, saying Sooner squads have been reading and heeding that sign for years, and that was in 1957. Barry Switzer said when he arrived in the 60s, the sign was already up, and that Bud Wilkinson's former players had told him it had been there for, you know, a decade already, at least.
So the question then is, why isn't Oklahoma the one associated with this phrase and with the sign in the way that Notre Dame clearly is?
I think it's just the power of brands and mystique and all the things that we understand a lot better nowadays. But, you know, for Notre Dame to have this sign show up right before they win a national title and get a TV deal where it's over the thing. And, you know, Oklahoma, meanwhile, has just gone about its business, you know. Bud Wilkinson won 47 straight games. He won 3 national titles, and nobody knew that this sign was there. I grew up 4.5 hours away from Norman, and I didn't know it. I tend to follow college football a little bit.
No, I mean, Dave, I bring you on here because you're like a college football historian in a very real way, and you didn't even know about this thing that was right in your, you know, expanded zip code, basically, of the sport. And so has Oklahoma tried to get credit over the years? Like, have they tried to get Notre Dame to take their sign down?
They've not tried to get them to take that down. I mean, Oklahoma's actually approached this in a very rational way, which is bizarre in the big time world of college sports, right? They said, we haven't been able to establish that we originated it. You haven't been able to establish that you originated it. So let's just agree to sort of almost like a non-escalation clause here, and we'll just agree not to push it. And for decades, that's how it's been.
I mean, I guess for Oklahoma, though, for all of that diplomacy, Have people assumed, though, that, like, reporters have, do you think that reporters have just assumed that Oklahoma had copied Notre Dame then?
I don't know if they thought they'd copied him, because I don't think they even knew they had it. I mean, I went to the Nebraska-Oklahoma game and saw the players wearing Play Like a Champion shirts. There was a Play Like a Champion banner, and the PA announcer announced to the stadium to cheer Like a Champion's Day, and it kind of took me back a little bit.
So, Dave, you called Lou Holtz for this story. You called him to talk to him, to investigate, to clear stuff up about where all of this came from. What did he have to say about Oklahoma being first?
He claimed he had never heard of this at Oklahoma. He said, I just brought it up for the first time to him. And he said, I never knew Oklahoma even had the sign. And if they had the sign in the 40s, ours was up in the 30s, I'll tell you, because it was an old book.
And Dave, this isn't just a story about us trying to set the record straight as tradition is concerned. This is obviously a story now about money, real money involved. What happened in September of 2020?
A new ownership group purchased the rights to the trademark of Play Like a Champion Today, the phrase itself, and that group was led by Lou Holtz. That's the part where the real outrage, it's Lou freaking Holtz of all people, is the mentality in Oklahoma. I was in the press box on that Saturday after the trademark news came out, and I saw Joe Castiglione, the Sooners athletic director, and I asked him about it, and he was just completely floored by it. And so I called him the next week to talk about it, and he just said, you know, how could this happen? Our fans are outraged. You know, it's not his to copyright.
So Oklahoma obviously is feeling miffed about all of this. But there's another issue, Dave, with Lou Holtz getting this copyright. Because within Notre Dame, within their world also, there was a competing claim on this, right? I mean, Lori Wenger, the woman who made the physical sign for Lou Holtz originally and all of those replicas for so many others, she was actually the first person to get a trademark on this.
Well, that's the remarkable thing about this to me, is if you go back and you look at what big business college sports is now, and in 1993, the woman who painted the sign managed to trademark this phrase out from under these two giant institutions. Josh Gerber, who is extremely helpful, he specializes in sports trademarks, and he went through all this with me to explain to me that, you know, all these people were fighting over it. The brand Champion, the athletic apparel company, contested originally, and so they kind of gave up their fight. And Gerber said that's a common thing when there's small, you know, like individuals against a giant company. But it took them years to sort of get back to where they could own a piece of it.
So the Wengers, they eventually abandon their claim because there is a challenge from companies with far deeper pockets. But does she still get to profit off of this in any way?
Yeah, the university basically just dealt with her as if she did have the trademark and licensed it from her. So she painted signs. She said she painted nearly 700 of them before. She had multiple sclerosis and she was blind in her right eye and was diagnosed with a malignant brain tumor later. And she said that the money from painting the signs and selling the products, she told ESPN in 2012 that, you know, that helped pay for her medical bills, and it just helped her stay afloat. And finally, they just were able to document the fact that they had had this history of producing all this stuff and were able to get the actual trademark.
So after all of that, Dave, Lori Wenger and her family, they own the copyright. It's theirs. They get it from Notre Dame, which is kind of mind-blowing to me. And then they end up selling it in the way that infuriated Oklahoma to Lou Holtz and his group for an undisclosed amount. Is that right?
It's right. Nobody knows the terms of the deal. It's Notre Dame entered into a 5-year agreement with them, with the new group. But I haven't been able to figure out what the Wingers or whoever else their partners were got out of it.
And this group with Lou Holtz and former players, right? How and why did they decide to get into this marketplace as they did?
Well, I think, you know, the trademark in sports has become big business. Every player trademarks, you know, for instance, Kyler Murray trademarking Hail Murray as soon as that game's over. That's a common practice now. And so you have players like Rick Meyer and Derek Mays, who are huge Notre Dame stars, who are in the business world now, and they see this opportunity out there to get this trademark. And they just kind of got a group together and say, here's what we want to do. They've filed for several expansions of the trademark, including, you know, golf equipment, golf towels, balls. Rick Meyer has a Play Like a Champion Chardonnay and Cabernet. And his first run sold out. He said they used it at Notre Dame commencement, even when his son graduated, which he thought was pretty cool. So they have a lot of plans to use it, which is, again, part of that whole escalation thing.
And Dave, I find it hard to not think of an infuriated Barry Switzer who is watching all of these products come out. And I imagine even more like in the pipeline as this money grab continues.
Yeah, I think that for, you know, Myers Group says that they just wanted to keep the trademark home, as it were, and keep a good relationship with the university and sort of restore the luster of it. I don't know exactly what happened with the business partners, but they said, you know, there were similar relationships that were strained there, and they don't want, you know, Lou Holtz specifically mentioned a Drink Like a Champion sign that, you know, he didn't think was the right way to use it. And so they want to protect the trademark.
So to be clear here, Lou Holtz just wants his particular aesthetic when it comes to, yeah, you can do the wine, the Play Like a Champion today, Chardonnay, but you can't do Drink Like a Champion today.
Yeah, that's just classy.
So Dave, we have this group of former players led by their former coach taking this tradition that they claim they started. They're selling it back to their alma mater here. They're making money off of it. Oklahoma, though, the University of Oklahoma, where does this leave them?
Well, they're still stunned by this. I think, Joe Castiglione mentioned that, you know, this is something that maybe they weren't as aware of in the past, that they're much more on top of now. So I imagine that they'll keep watching. But as far as what they're doing with it, they said they're not going to change. They have Play Like a Champion signs up at the music school there for the musicians. They have Swim Like a Champion at the swim center, Run Like a Champion at the track center. And they said they're going to keep on doing what they're doing.
And just legally, so I understand this, I mean, they're allowed to keep doing that even though the trademark is owned by Lou Holtz?
From what Josh Gerber, the trademark attorney that worked with me on this story, told me is that there's plenty of legal precedent that if you have an established history of something, someone else gets a trademark, they can't come back to you and ask you to stop using it. You just probably can't expand on that.
So, Dave, when you step back from all of this now and you look at it in the light of day and you evaluate these competing histories, this now kind of aggressive non-aggression pact, whose side are you on in the end here?
I can't say whose side I'm on, I don't think, but I certainly understand the power of that one sign at Notre Dame at that specific design. I think there's an easy case to be made for Notre Dame claiming that. But the phrase itself, it's hard to dispute the fact that it's used everywhere. It's all people all across the country use it in different high schools and colleges. So I can't understand how someone can own it. And the Sooners certainly had a ton of success with it. Bud Wilkinson, one of the greatest coaches in college football history. But if anybody should probably be upset about it, it might be Minnesota. I mean, Wilkinson brought it from there. Lou Holtz spent the previous two seasons as head coach at Minnesota before he came to Notre Dame and put that sign up. So who knows?
Wait a minute. So Dave Wilson, what you're saying is that the next step of this investigation involves you blowing the dust off of some books in some basement of a Minnesota library.
I'll meet you there, Pablo.
Dave, thank you for podcasting like a champion today.
Appreciate it.
All right, coming up. October, as you know, is the most haunted month of the year, and so we canvassed all of you to hear about your sports curses, spells, and rituals. And it gets weird.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Here's another story I want you to know. Halloween is almost upon us, and odds are you've already experienced your fair share of frights, especially, you know, if you root for the Detroit Lions. And a couple weeks ago, in the spirit of the season, we asked you, our listeners, to send in any sports superstitions that you have in an attempt to make yourselves less terrified. And what we got was a variety of amazingly genuine and also legitimately concerning responses, like this one from a fan of the Washington Nationals.
All right, Pablo, you asked for some superstitions. I'm a big Nats fan. The Nats won the World Series. I was standing in my roommate's room because I couldn't watch Howie Kendrick bat because he had been doing absolutely no favors for us until he hit a grand slam. Or wait, maybe it wasn't a grand slam. It was some home run. I don't know. He helped us win. I was standing in the doorway of my roommate's room. I couldn't even see the TV. So I stayed there in his doorway for the rest of the series.
And then there was this former junior hockey player in Canada who literally went on a hot streak.
When I was in minor hockey up in Canada, during a specific year, during a playoff run, we would light my undershirt on fire before the game while I was wearing it. And it was a routine that we did all the way through the playoffs, which was a very dangerous thing probably for 10-year-olds to be doing, but also a really ridiculous memory that has stayed at the test of time for me.
And speaking of very young people, our own June Lee, ESPN staff writer and friend of the podcast, he has this whole shoes thing.
I have a pair of sneakers that I've worn for nearly every single big sports reporting assignment I've done over the course of my short career so far. I bought the Nike Mars Yards when I was a reporter at Bleacher Report, and not only are they one of my favorite sneakers of all time from a design and concept standpoint, but they've also become my lucky sneakers. I've worn them at the All-Star Game, both MLB and NBA. I've worn them at the World Series. I wore them at the 2018 Winter Olympics in Korea, and I wore them on my first day on Around the Horn and at ESPN in Bristol because they are my good luck charm.
And we also learned in the course of doing all of this reporting that Sarah Spain and Jason Fitz, co-hosts of the ESPN radio show Spain and Fitz, airing 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern, have lived lives defined by ritual. So, guys, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Pablo.
So, Sarah, I understand that you had a ritual, a very personal, very real ritual that you had when you were competing in track. Is that right?
It actually spanned all of the sports that I played junior and senior year in high school and all 4 years of college track. It was multifaceted, but it all centered around the same human being. And anyone who's heard me speak for, I don't know, anywhere between 30 seconds to a minute has probably already encountered my obsession with Michael Jordan. These are, I would say, maybe less superstitions than they are grounds for some sort of
restraining order,
those kind of things. But essentially, I had two t-shirts. One was a shirt that said, "Why drive when you can fly?" And it had Michael Jordan's just legs off the front. And then one was one that my mom handmade for me that said, "Be like Mike" on it. And one of the two had to be over my uniform or my track kit or anything before I started. I had a yellow Walkman, so aging myself here. So I would be wearing the shirt, listening to Be Like Mike. I had to dip my finger into MJ's Secret Stuff candy that was part of the rollout of the Space Jam film.
Oh my God.
The original, the OG. And then also when I would get my singlet, for every meet you have a different number that's randomly assigned. I would
have to look
at the number.
Yeah, there's a 2 and a 3 involved.
I would have
to
use math to somehow make those numbers add up to or subtract to and end up at 23 in my head before I could race. Again, less superstitions, more just absolute grounds for restraining orders and signs early on that maybe I should be prevented from meeting him later in life several times and essentially accosting him.
So Sarah comes at this from a place of legally questionable projected confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Fitz, I mean, you have this thing that you do that seems to come from the opposite. What are you doing during Raider games?
Deep fear.
I mean, first and foremost, I think Sarah's lost her mind. I mean, that's what we've learned about that.
Yeah.
Let's focus on that. But like this year, the first game of the season, I stood because I was in the stadium and I didn't really have a great place to sit. So I stood for the entirety of the game. And then, you know, the next week I'm at home and I realized that things weren't starting all that great. And it occurred to me, well, you know, I happen to be standing. So I'm getting everything set up and I got the couch right behind me and my dog Annabelle gets up on the couch and I look behind and she's sitting and she's comfy and I'm thinking, it's fine. I'll just stand. So I'm standing for the Steelers game and I'm standing the entirety of the first half because now they're playing well and I didn't expect that. And then all of a sudden I sit and the one time I sat was when Derek Carr got hurt and everybody collectively held their breath. And I realized at that point that it was a message from God that I needed to actually stand for the duration of the game.
God is absolutely not a Raiders fan. Let me just clarify. If there is a God, she does not like the Raiders.
Yeah, and she's probably not a big Jason Fitz fan most days either. So I think she's all out on this. But I realized that at the end of the game, my legs were like straight up sore. Like that's 3.5 hours of just standing the whole time, and then like negotiating the eating, and then figuring out like at some point you want to like go to the bathroom. Well, you can't do that. Like so, you just stand there where you
are. Wait, hold on. What is negotiating the bathroom like for Jason Fitz during these moments?
I have not been afraid of peeing in a jar or in a bowl, like whatever it takes. Like I'm not moving from a spot. And then I'm not going to stand there uncomfortable, but I'm also not going to ruin the mojo of my favorite team, even if it means I got to tinkle in a bottle. Like, I'm not afraid to do that.
So it's pretty clear that you guys will never break your particular rituals, your superstitions. Why do you think it is that sports in particular is so rife with these kinds of traditions?
Well, I can only speak for myself. That even if we can't tell whether they're working or not, it offers us the facade of control. And as a noted control freak, if that's something that lets me feel like I have some sort of say over what's coming next, then what's the harm? Other than, you know, again, the restraining orders and lawsuits.
I think Sarah says control. I think more like contribution connection. For me, yeah, like sports logic is gone, right? And we all know that. What we do doesn't matter to whether or not they win or lose the game. But the highs and lows for me are so irrational. I think it's just part of what ties you into your team and your game day.
That sounds sweet, but I think that's just the answer of someone who was in the band instead of on the team.
Yeah, that's probably
fair. I always felt pretty connected because I was out there winning the games. You know, you were
hey,
the
I
manager,
win them on Madden.
I presume.
I win them on Madden all the time. Let's go.
So however you watch or play or consume or cope with sports, we here at ESPN Daily, we're here to send you good vibes from the great beyond to the green monster, from the dearly departed to Dodger Stadium. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to get back to, my Ben Simmons seance. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.